the federal government has recently announced it's going to make more acreage available for drilling in the Great Australian Bight. This has, of course, been met with backlash from locals and environmental organisations. And here to tell us a bit more about this and other stories is Craig Wilkins from Conservation SA. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning.
So what are the latest developments with drilling in the Great Australian Bight?
It's actually a really really full and an intense space at the moment. There's a lot going on. As you say, there's been a release of even more acreage, which is deeply concerning because the stuff that's currently there is highly contested, basically because they literally cannot prove that they can do it safely. And quite rightly, the community expects that there needs to be 100% guarantee that this won't end up like the Gulf of Mexico. Already, BP and Chevron have been have walked away because they recognise they can't do it safely. So basically got one major player left, which is the Norwegian Statoil or Equinor that have recently sort of changed their identity. But there are some other players as well. But in the last few weeks, we've had Statoil has asked for an extension because that they still haven't got their approvals through. NOPSEMA, the regulator, has basically knocked back some more seismic testing for another company. So that's been almost 12 months now without any approvals coming. We've had the mayor of Kangaroo Island going to Norway to appeal to the Statoil AGM. The Onkaparinga Council have joined a range of other councils across the state to oppose it. Launch of a Bight 2020 campaign by the Greens and others for World Heritage listing. Hands Across the Sand, which is an annual sort of a celebration and stand by environmentalists led by the Wilderness Society to show community support. That was very popular this year. So we've had all these things happening. So it's a really, really interesting space. And clearly the South Australian community is starting to really mobilise in response to it and to stand up and say, we don't want this.
Well, it's very good to hear that these efforts towards maintaining something in opposition to corporate interests and something like oil, which has been dominating the world for just about 100 years. People sort of want more and more of it. It's good to hear that here in South Australia we're banding together and fighting against that kind of thing.
Yeah, because I mean the trend is very much against the oil companies. If you look around worldwide, there's a massive shift towards alternative fuels, including electric cars and hydrogen, and that is only going to increase. So what's happening is it's a mad rush by fossil fuel companies with old business models trying to exploit their last bits of reserves, but by the time and this is part of the problem, by the time they actually go through the full exploration process and then start building and installing drilling rigs and then starting to exploit the resources, and it's years and years away. And by that stage, we just won't have that sort of need potentially, because people are just shifting straight from oil to electric cars. The production of hydrogen from wind and solar potentially can produce some of the source materials for like a lot of oil is used around fossil fuels and around fertilizers and other parts of the food chain. So there's options there. So yeah, the trend's against them, and essentially we've because of climate change, we've got no choice but to act.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that's kind of a story of conservation success, and it has also been 20 years since another story of success in the same way. The Jabiluka blockade helped stop the mining of uranium in the Northern Territory, and Conservation SA are celebrating with a bit of a film night. Can you tell us a bit around the story of the background of this blockade?
So 20 years ago, there was a plan to open up a uranium mine in the Kakadu National Park on Mirar country. There was a very strong reaction led by the Mirar people and backed by people from around the country. And in the end, there was an 8-month blockade. Over 500 people were arrested during that time, and as a result, the company ERA committed to not proceed until they got the approval of the Mirar people, which was a welcome step, and that's still the case today. So there is still uranium mining going on in the vicinity, in the Ranger mine, and there's a whole lot of concern around leakage of tailing dams and right next door to Kakadu. But at least this one, there was a real strong and sustained community response, and it ultimately stopped what was a daft proposal. So it's, yeah, time to acknowledge that and celebrate it, and sort of see if we can make sure that community stands strong against ideas like this in the future.
I imagine that uranium mining isn't the type of venture you can undertake that is rather irreversible, that can be turned back. Once you start, it's really hard to sort of put everything back the way it once was.
Yeah.
How do we continue avoiding this kind of mistake, if that be what it's called?
You're exactly right. There's the type of mining required is very dirty, and in particular you sort of have this what's called a tailings dam. All the sort of, once you extract all the uranium, what's left is some sort of toxic sludge, essentially, and there's not much they can do with it, so they just put it in great big ponds, and eventually it's supposed to dry out and be covered over. But that's the thing: once you play with those chemicals, they do change, and so they start to move, and they're not as stable as they used to be. And when you've got an environment like there, where there is heavy tropical downpour and flooding it's a very unstable sort of environment to do something like that and have that kind of toxic material just sitting there. So that there's always, with these things, the big push is to ensure that the companies clean up completely after themselves, but there hasn't been a successful example anywhere in the country of a uranium mine that has successfully returned the land to somewhere near what it was. It's just been left.
Bit like kids leaving their toys all around.
and it's about governments having the courage to insist on those that proper cleanup before the mine begins, and often they're in a bit of a rush to get it going, and as a result the community is left to fix up and pay for it later.
We're speaking with Conservation SA's Craig Wilkins. Now, Craig, the World Environment Fair is being held for the first time at the Adelaide Showgrounds this weekend. What's going to be happening there?
Yeah, actually, it's the second time. It was on last year as well for the first time. But it's happening again, I think, because it was successful last year. Yeah, so there's a range of activities. I suppose the biggest draw card is Craig Rucastle from the War on Waste. So that's going to be a really, I reckon, very enjoyable session around talking through what we could and should be doing minimising waste and maximising recycling. But there's all sorts of, there's nature play activities, very kid focused. There's animals and critters and workshops and lots of information, and it's a good chance to sort of check out what's going on and what are some of the interesting ideas. We've got a stall where we're working with a fantastic idea, which is to take coffee grounds from shops and then use it as to grow mushrooms, and then so you can buy a kit, have it on your kitchen shelf, and then open it up, and then you have this constant stream of mushrooms for a couple of months, and then once you're finished, you just put it straight into the compost, and it's all breaks down completely, and you can buy another one, and it works out actually cheaper than buying mushrooms You also get a chance to like that the users what was previously a waste material which went to landfill now becomes something useful. So we're really excited about these sorts of ideas to transform stuff into genuine resource.
Yeah, it's great to be part of that process.
Yeah,
and to sort of have it there in the kitchen, and you can watch it, and you can see how it grows, and help it.
Yeah,
that's always a lot of fun. Now, Craig, before we go, I'm going to head out into my usual day and consumption patterns, and I'm sure when you're listening, you'll be heading out there too. What's something small that I can do to help reduce my own level of waste and impact?
It really depends on your choices, but the simple one is around things like bringing your own cup for coffee rather than taking those disposable ones. That's a really simple thing, but there's essentially pretty much these days every choice you make around even things like, you know, which bank you use or in superannuation or anything like that, through to how you transport yourself and what food you buy. Pretty much these days, there are choices which are lighter on the planet, it doesn't take it too much. A few years ago, it meant you had to do a lot of research to work out which was better. But these days, there's a fair bit of information around, so it's pretty easy to make good choices if you put a bit of time into it.
Excellent. I'll try and be a bit more careful as I go about my day. Thanks for joining us, Craig.
Thank you.
Craig Wilkins from Conservation SA joining us. You're listening to Breakfast here on Radio Adelaide.